This is the third episode of the Nutrition, Education, and Racial Disparities in Health podcast from Holistic Matters. Today, our guest is Dr. Michaela Edwards, a chiropractor from the Kansas City metro area, owner of E-Elite Wellness, and president of the American Black Chiropractic Association. We were excited and honored to talk with Dr. Edwards about what guided her during her career, the role she sees nutrition education playing in chiropractic care, and, in her experience, the obstacles faced by minority healthcare practitioners.
I guess you can say delayed for some other reason, but for lack of a better word, but it was delayed a little bit in that I graduated with my undergraduate and then went into the workforce for about 5 years before finding chiropractic. The idea of becoming or even going to grad school did not even run across my mind. I was completely the student that graduated and was like, thank God that's over with. Let me figure out what else I can do. I was living in Dallas and I suffered with allergies really bad. And one of the girls that I had worked with at a bank, we were into banking to kind of get through, you know, undergrad. She was married and her husband was a student at Parker. And so I went to their home and he introduced me to chiropractic. I was suffering with allergies. He adjusted me. I instantly was relieved. And so the rest was history. I completely started to research. He told me he thought I'd be a good fit because I did have an undergrad in exercise, sport, and health studies, which back then was right before they went into athletic training programs in a degree program versus just a certification or licensure. And so I kind of went into that mode and decided that I was going to be a personal trainer and, you know, athletic trainer until I just figured it out. And at some point in that whole situation, once I saw what chiropractic was, I decided, okay, well, let me do some research and see how I can get started. And I did not need a lot to go into a DC program. I think I had maybe one or two semesters of matriculation to where I had to take a couple of classes to get caught up. But I just rolled into the program. The next thing I know, I met Logan. You know, it was a very quick turnaround for me once I was exposed to chiropractic. But beforehand, I never was exposed to chiropractic, had no clue what it was. So that's how I got interested.
You know, when you started in chiropractic, how did you see that moving forward? And, you know, there's not a lot of women. We know that, right? It's about 75% male. And so what kind of made you take that leap, you know, because you were probably a minority in multiple ways as being a woman and a person of color.
Absolutely. In my class, I think there was like 72 or 75 in my class, a little over 70. I was the only Black person in the class. And then I was one of eight women in the class. That's how out of balance the class was. So my experience was in that world that was mostly white males. And if there were women, they definitely were not Black women. They were white women or another, you know, minority. I had a lot of Canadians in my class. As far as how I approach things, I literally just sat in a seat as a blank slate and wanted to just learn everything that I could learn from what I was seeing and being, you know, presented with. But at the same time, I wanted to figure out where I was going to apply what I had learned and to kind of change my world into one that would be, you know, best fit for me in chiropractic. So it took a lot of soul searching. And I'll say it took a lot of soul searching only because I completely was enthralled in a whole nother profession. Like, it took 5 years between undergrad and chiropractic school for me to start a DC program. But what I actually had done, I did start a job. Well, I told you I was working in banks as an undergrad, and I just kind of built onto that. So I had a very, very successful, lucrative corporate America job, I guess, that I was doing well. I was making money. And then boom, let's go to chiropractic. So chiropractic school was not necessarily the thing that I was thinking, oh, let me get out immediately, open a practice, you know, get a building. That was never my linear set steps. So for me, it was just find your footing. So I just took my time. I got out of chiropractic school. I actually took some time and did some moving around because I didn't want to live in St. Louis. I wasn't from there. And so, you know, took some time, moved around, played around with some things, took some board exams, took some, you know, other specialty trainings, you know, how we do your little seminar stuff and kind of learn some little niches and things of that nature and just build a brand. And I'm still at that phase right here today, but I've dived and dabbed into a few different things that would actually help toe the line, help me to just fill my basket, I guess, in chiropractic. And that's the ABCA. So that's that whole piece. And so I was like, well, what's down this row? So I joined the ABCA as a student and end up a leader in our region, my region. Of course, I went to Logan, so it was the central region of the ABCA. And once I got on the board of directors, because as a student, one of the student roles that are allowed is the national student rep. And that's how I ended up on the board. I was voted in as national student rep. I never left because I thought that is going to be my sole connection to the profession, no matter what it is that I'm doing. If I, you know, go and work at a bank, or if I want to be a stay-at-home mom, or, you know, do whatever it is that I want to do, my link back into the profession of chiropractic was always going to be the ABCA. So I made myself remain relevant and remain active with the organization. And here we are today. It's the weirdest thing, but here we are today.
And just to, you know, expand upon that, and will you say that this is what kept you motivated throughout your career? And this is what encouraged you to become the president? And can you tell us a bit more about what do you see yourself doing now?
When I was a student in the national student representative role, I actually, you know, took a look at how the, and I don't want to say elders because they may not be like elder in age, but veteran members of the association. I watched them and I call them my mentors now. So my mentors, I would watch them and I would actually try to figure out, okay, this is how they're doing it. This is what their vision is. This is what the vision of the founders were, the founder was with the chartering members. And I kind of envisioned what I thought the ABCA should be, you know, by the time I could potentially take it over as the president. So literally I was a student planning this in my mind back then and had no real clue that it would actually just tumble out. I guess that's the power of manifestation, right? Because I literally saw myself in this role as a president, but I knew there were steps that I had to take to get there. So of course, I went from national student rep, then I was appointed as communications chairman by past president. From there, I was voted as national treasurer, then national parliamentarian, then vice president, and now president. So it was kind of like I went down the role of responsibilities. And each time I took one of those roles, each time I was, you know, elevated to one of those roles, I actually committed myself to that role to change it and mold it so that by the time I become president, it's a very linear and trained, well-oiled machine, if that makes sense. So of course, when I became treasurer, I did a lot of things financial for the association to kind of get us to where we are today. We can do a few things. And that's not making money, but that's, you know, utilizing certain account types and, you know, making sure that we have avenues to filter money into different things or programs that we're running. And then as parliamentarian, I went in and I restructured our constitution and our bylaws to bring them into the new age, because we completely had a very our system was still old from what it was at the founding of the association. So I did all of that. And as vice president, I worked really, really diligently to make build some bridges and make some relationships closer with regards to our students, the schools that they go to, and the association, and link it back to the needs of the actual profession so that we can kind of do the work within our reach, you know, our SAPCA students, to kind of, you know, work on the same goal that I think all of the other leadership organizations in the profession have, which is to kind of get chiropractic to a point where we are higher than where we were on the list of who to call when you have an issue, right? And that's across the board in all homes in this nation, whether it's, you know, black, white, red, purple, or yellow, it doesn't matter. We really, I think everyone has the goal in mind to actually just bring the profession up on a plane to where we are now considered the go-to, the gold standard for healthcare in the nation.
So building off of that, what role do you see nutrition education playing in chiropractic care as you're looking to elevate the profession and move forward into the future?
Mm-hmm. I've thought about this quite a bit. So the first thing that I would say, we have to look at everything from a perspective of healthcare and return things back to things natural, right? Which is what the one of the premises of the art, science, and philosophy of the profession actually states. By things natural, you start obviously at what we're eating, and you can go back further and say, let's look at the agriculture and how what we're eating is prepared. And at that point, it becomes a very key component into the whole picture, the whole cycle where healthcare is concerned, where chiropractic fits in. So it is a huge part of what it is that we do. And, you know, as far as organizations that like Standard Process that does, you know, a specific, that goes through a specific process to become the gold standard of what it is that they do, then we most definitely take different keys and points and parts from what they do to pull it into the whole paradigm of chiropractic in order to offer our patients, our clientele, our, you know, communities, a better alternative when it comes down to nutrition and fit it into the holistic paradigm of optimal health. So I think it's a very big piece. And as far as the ABCA is concerned, this is why we're doing things like what we're doing today. We've had, you know, plenty of our members that would, that are, you know, speakers, official speakers for the ABCA that have nutrition within their background. They've taken some extra courses and have done some things that, you know, maybe other chiropractors have not. And so they've done some podcasts as well and have started, you know, trying to spread the word about that component when it comes down to healthcare. So it's very important. You know, I think we stand a great chance of working together, a better chance of working together for the greater good to actually end up with two components of healthcare that will go up a little higher, you know, another notch and people pay attention. So if we can drag you guys along, you know, for nutrition, that's cool. And if I have the spot and can drag nutrition along, I'm really doing that. So we'll make sure that they go hand in hand, because they should. I believe they should anyway.
How often do you think that people who are new to chiropractic are surprised to see nutrition playing such a huge role in chiropractic care?
I think it's a huge surprise to those people. You know why? Because we are not promoting chiropractic as a holistic thing. It's always whoever got the spot on the billboard, and it's normally a pain clinic, or whoever got the spot in a local blog or something, it's the pain clinic. So it's not necessarily a whole overview of the profession. And that's the piece that we want to change. So when you talk about what chiropractic is as a whole, you don't leave just one piece out and say, oh, it's just a pain clinic. You got a car wreck? Come over here. That's just one component. And we're not saying, you know, bash that. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is when we talk about a whole, you know, a whole piece of the pie, a whole pie, you have to take into consideration the pie is chiropractic, not just a piece. That's the piece. That's what we have to work on. So while chiropractic is the pie, you have nutrition, you have pain, you have pediatrics, you have geriatrics, you have energetics, you have, you know, quantum touch, you have, you know, the healing touches and all of that. Like, all of these are options within the profession of chiropractic. So I think a lot of people, that's not how we've marketed the profession up until now. And that's not how we've taught it. I take that back. We've taught it because nutrition is in the DC, you know, curricula. But what has not been pushed is utilize this in your clinic or within your, you know, paradox of keep it as a trade in your tool bag, if you will. And so I think people are very, you know, surprised when they get presented that component of chiropractic, no, where nutrition fits in. They don't know, because it is something that is not necessarily pushed or marketed when we talk about what it is that we do. But I think we should change that. I think we're on the way. We're going to get that change. And, you know, just like that famous quote that was constantly put out for years that would say, and it leaves me who it was, but the doctor of the future will not actually, you know, prescribe medicine, but will instead lead their patient down the path of, you know, nutrition. So I believe that. That'll be a very big key to what chiropractic is in our near future.
we see that there's elevated rates of different diseases within, you know, groups of minority individuals. Mm-hmm. And nutrition really can be such a huge factor. And so how do you see ABCA really having an effect in that and pushing that forward or within the group? I know that we've done some work, and when we've talked to others, that like, how do we get that word out there to really help the greatest population?
So from the ABCA's perspective, what we have done with that initiative, like I said, was created the speakers portfolio. And within that piece, we have those that are, you know, big on the nutrition. So what we like to do on the second side of that is, once you have anything that is marketable, meaning an item, if you did a podcast, a blog link, or whatever these things are, we most definitely would love to receive those items so that we can cycle back all of the information down to our membership. So we can add a nutrition segment on our newsletter that we send out monthly. I can have our communications chairman most definitely work with you guys to get some type of, I don't know, spot if you want on one of our newsletters, or even these types of recordings that we do. We most definitely want to make go viral. We can put them out in the social media aspects and even put the link into our newsletters to reach more people, because we have an email list that does not just include active members, but it's everybody who's ever, you know, wanted to get the newsletter. So we got like a little over 2,000 contacts within our reach. So most definitely, I think the next step is, once we create some tools of the trade with regards to nutrition within a profession, then we just need to disseminate them and make sure that everybody gets them and start to push them out. We're updating our website right now for a members only section. And of course, all of these things that are being done will be loaded there as a tool for all of our members. And at the same time, we're going to have some information publicly on the facing page of our website, so that people who are not members don't click the members only, they don't have a credential to get in, they still can receive some information. They still can download blog links and, you know, video podcast recordings and such. So I think at this point, what we just need to do is to keep doing the work. We need to normalize, if you will, us working together doing things like this. If you have an idea, most definitely reach out, and I can pretty much put on my feelers and say, well, Dr. So-and-so over here might be the best one for that. Call them and they'll get with you. And then once you get the final product, send it back to us and we'll make sure we disseminate the way that we should. But I think we're on the right steps. I think the last 90 days have been a whirlwind of time for people in our nation, for people in our profession, especially our students. I think just in that short amount of time, all that we've accomplished as far as the jumpstart to doing things that are, you know, taking us closer to our goal, I think that we're doing the right thing. We just need to continue the work.
Well, that sounds like, you know, you're moving your organization and working with your people towards the mission that you've set. So that was something we were going to have you expand a bit on, but you've kind of already answered that and integrated it into the previous response. So switching gears just a little bit, we're going to go back to, you know, some of your experiences as a chiropractor and your path to becoming the president of the ABCA, and telling us, you know, what are some of the obstacles that minority chiropractors and HCPs face?
I most definitely will say the board exams is probably one of the largest obstacles that the ABCA has seen within our membership of graduates and new doctors. So it's just getting the boards out of the way quickly, I guess. And so the ABCA we're attempting to combat that by implementing a national board review, you know, committee that will host different webinars, or I don't know how she's going to do it. It's either going to be on Zoom, but she'll have some meetings that will actually help our students and our, you know, doctors that maybe haven't finished their boards to kind of get better prepared in a different way for the exams. So she's done, we've had our board member, Dr. Lindsay Banks, working on that. And so she's working very diligently to get things scheduled. And then we'll implement an actual board review within our annual conventions, so that the students and the docs that want to get it there, that can be a part of our national convention instead of actually, you know, having to pay a separate fee. So it's like a member benefit. But the board review, the board exams are one of the hardest things, I think, that I can see within our community, within our organization, that we've had issues with. Other issues are, once doctors get into clinic, they are completely inundated and over I can't say overrun, but a lot of work happens because most of the time, if you can just look at one of my presentations that I've given in the last 30 days, I talk about the offset of the number of minority chiropractors or Black chiropractors in certain parts or certain demographics of the United States. When you talk about the ratio of potential patients to say 1,000 patients per one doctor, and it's so offset, there will be one doctor, one Black or minority chiropractor in certain counties across this nation, and there would be like 5,000 potential patients, right? So that means this one chiropractor is really overworked. He or she is tired. He or she is not getting into the community, doing community work, meaning doing the marketing of, number one, their practice, number two, the profession, and just educating the urban core or those minority counties of what chiropractic is and how chiropractic can help, right? They're stuck in the clinic. They're stuck treating patients because they're 1 to 5,000. Whereas the offset in other cities is much different. You have a lot of these other chiropractors that, you know, are the offset may be one chiropractor to each one chiropractor. You might have, you know, 1,000 or maybe 500 patients or whatnot. So of course you have your patients and then you have time, right? Your clientele, your scheduling is a little different. You may have more time to do the things like getting into the community, doing talks about chiropractic, trying to work with the youth in the community where the clinic is so that the youth will know what it is and how they can become chiropractors if they so want to. So we definitely end up trying to keep up with the times in our clinics. And a lot of times we don't get a chance to do the teaching part. So that's another issue. And of course, again, the ABCA is working to try to rectify that problem by helping our students graduate and become active, you know, trained clinicians so that they can open up a clinic or at least go and assist in these clinics, right? To help get the word across the board and spread chiropractic. Another thing that I see is an issue is, of course, we're having a lot of hard times of trying to open up a clinic because lack of information and lack of resource. So a lot of us graduate with that huge debt, right? The student loan debt. And then we turn around and we try to figure out, well, are we going to get a building? Or are we going to, you know, then you get a building, you're like, well, can I afford to turn the lights on? You know, there's so many things that come into that. So we're moving in then to the financial building and training side of things for the ABCA. And so we have a couple of, for our new member, we created a new member category, which is for new docs specifically to counter combat that issue. And within that category, the new benefits are to offer trainings with three companies that the ABCA has partnered with that most definitely become the extra training after school, right? So we have one organization that can teach you systems and literally on the job training. So our students and our new doctors can go and shadow these doctors. They've confirmed that this is what they do. They have multiple clinics in a couple of cities. I want to say Memphis, Tennessee, and there's one other, South Carolina, maybe. I could be wrong about that. But we have a couple of doctors that are dedicated to that. And so we have students that go and actually end up shadowing them for however long they need. And they learn everything, forms, you know, systems, computer systems, scheduling systems. And then they get hands-on training and refreshers when it comes down to patient doctor etiquette in actually treating a patient, right? So that's one aspect. And then we have another side, another company that's doing a lot of work with us on offering trainings to our students and doctors for, you know, philosophy, type of philosophy training, as well as, you know, some physical training so that you can prepare your body in order to, you know what I mean, treat patients. And then the third organization is our brothers Evoke that are the whole piece when it comes down to training for chiropractic. They have made a plethora of relationships within the profession. So they have a finance specialist that actually the ABC has been working with him for quite some time. They you know, really filter our students and our doctors where they need to be. If you have an issue with the finance piece, call this person. Here's your number. Here's your contact. And they know who you are. If you have an issue with, you know, learning to adjust in a specific, do a specific move on an adjustment, you know, you want to call this number over here, or here's who you can call, go to and get some on the hands training. And if you wanted to just talk to a mentor that's working in a clinic in a community in which you wish to work in, here's all of the people that you can call to get some type of upliftment and, you know, information that can help you. Evoke is a great asset for the ABCA to have. And so we have those three additional training components that we actually give to our new members and our students. So our new doctor members and our students. And so ABCA is working very hard to get that, combat a couple of those issues with those new programs and additions to our member benefit section. So we're excited. We're excited. Again, that's that work we've been ruffling up and trying to get started. And this will be literally the time, the next 12 to 24 months will be a good time to assess what it is we're doing right now. And we'll see exactly what the result on the other end of the time line brings us.
So Dr. Edwards, you've given us quite a number of issues, but I just wanted to go back and touch base and get a bit more detail on some of the issues you mentioned. So the first one you mentioned was the board exams. Mm-hmm. What aspect of it makes it an issue? If you can clarify that for us, is it the cost? Is it access to the training needed for the what about it is an issue for the chiropractors that you've been working with?
Yeah. So the board piece is something that Dr. Lindsay Banks has really taken a deep dive into. So she's worked with the NBCE to pull some numbers and to see exactly what those numbers mean, to analyze the numbers. She's done that and she's created a program that includes a survey that we're working on right now to send out to all of our members, as well as all of our student members, so that we can get that the answer to that question. But what I'm seeing in our chats and what I'm seeing on our social media pages, when we even have a discussion about board exams, there's a question that falls along the lines of, why can't students pass the boards on the very first try?
Okay.
So one of those things is a question that comes up. Another question that comes up is the cost. Why is it so expensive, especially if it's, you know, everything is a computer test? The other issues, I think, is just, I feel, and this is me personally, I haven't talked to my board about this, so this is me doing a, you know, disclaimer that this is not an ABCA thing. This is just my thing. I feel like the structure of how our curricula is set up programs in our schools, the fact that it does not include a true defined, number one, cost that is rolled into education, the education piece of chiropractic. So in other words, your tuition costs not covering your board exams, that's one thing. I think we probably should look at that. That way you won't have the issue of students not necessarily having the money to take boards when it comes time to take them. If they can pay their tuition or get student loans, then they're already paid for and they're there when you're ready to take them. But I also still think that there needs to be a little bit of an implementation into the DC programs that not necessarily focuses on so much of like midterms and finals within the curriculum, but literally teach, if you're going to teach and we have to take this exam, teach for the exam. Because at this point, there's a lot of things that almost are like totally separate. And it takes a little bit of time to catch a sweet spot for like the NBCE to get the up-to-date questions from their pool that they pull questions from that best represent what the students who literally are sitting in the seat right now to take the exam just learned, if that makes sense. I think it'll be a lot easier and a lot better balanced of a situation if we can kind of build in the board piece into the curriculum so the students don't have to deal with that stress and then graduate and you go straight into clinic and you just start practicing. I think we have to look at it. We've done it this way for quite some time. And I apologize. I don't have the true numbers of like, you know, what's the ratio of pass rate for minorities versus, we don't have any of that data. I can just only go by the students and the doctors that I've interacted with within the associations. So I think that's one of the things.
So basically incorporating into the curricular aspects of what they will encounter on the boards, even if you don't always want to just base the curricula on preparing for the test, because there's so much you need to learn outside of the testing, but then incorporating some of that, those components, so that students are better prepared.
That's one of the key pieces that would change a lot.
And then the other issue you had brought up was, you know, the ratio of patients to chiropractors, where some of the chiropractors tend to have, they're overrun by having too many patients. How does that play in with, and I'm assuming that's when the chiropractors are in an area where patients, especially if they're minority chiropractors and healthcare providers, the patients are aware of the concept of chiropractic care and they're familiar with that and they're educated about that. But how does that connect with when, you know, they're in communities where the patients don't know about it? There isn't that education or that knowledge of the benefit and the value of chiropractic care. What are issues that you're seeing that, you know, pretty much parallel or on the flip side of what the issue that you previously mentioned?
Yeah, there's two things that can happen at the end of that scenario. So the first thing could be, if, like you said, there's not a lot of people that knows what is to, you know, what chiropractic is and whatnot. And if the chiropractors in the urban core and the minority communities are actually in the clinics all the time and not, you know, selling chiropractic, then they have to be good enough, right, for word of mouth to bring people back. So then you send your patients out and do the patient to patient education, and hopefully they'll do enough good educating of their surroundings to bring people back so that the chiropractor can then do the real education of the patient and get them started on the treatment. That's one thing that can happen. So, but if the chiropractor is not, you know, strong, then that still leaves a lot of people in the community not knowing what chiropractic is or knowing what the benefit of it is, which is what we see today. Or the other side of that could be the chiropractor in that scenario that would be boggled down within a clinic. If they're the only one in their city or in their county or in their area, the urban core of whatever community they represent, if they're the only one and they're good, the other side of the spectrum is everyone knows they catch the wave and say, oh, come back. And so that's how you end up with our chiropractors being so busy, because they're very good at what they do, but they can't get to everyone. So you're still leaning on a patient-to-patient education. The very first education to the public about what chiropractic is now remains patient-to-patient instead of DC to patient. You know what I'm saying? So that's the piece we're trying to counter combat. We like the patient-to-patient education, although they can't tell you what chiropractic was good for my headaches if they came to their chiropractor for back pain. Does that make sense? Right. So it's kind of like, you know, it's a song and dance. So if we can cut out the very initial exposure of anyone to chiropractic being doctor to patient, not necessarily patient to patient, then we can change that outlook. We can change those numbers. And so that's what we're doing, some studies as well. We're working the research piece. We've added a research committee to our board that's led by Dr. Daryl Blackburn, who is very diligent in working on some research studies that will kind of tell, I guess, the higher ups in our profession, the grand leaders in our profession, will show them what that offset of diversity looks like within a very diverse population of clinics and what's going on in those clinics. So we can to change from a curriculum side in order to prepare a chiropractor for the role that gives them the first contact as doctor to patient education, but also being very strong in chiropractic and taking a patient in and making sure that they're good at what they do so that the marketing that will happen afterwards still makes sense. So the research piece is big as well, and that's what we're working on too.
So for the last issue you mentioned was the lending and the finances. So as we've touched point on Evoke Chiropractic before, you know, what is the prevalence of the partnerships with the new chiropractors or existing chiropractors? And do you see that as potentially a way of overcoming in the interim some of the lack of resources or the financial hurdles that new chiropractors are facing? Would you encourage them to do more partnership? Is that something that's already being done?
From my personal perspective, I always tell people or urge people to do the research and pick what's best for their path. However, from an ABCA perspective, we cover everything. So the first thing is we actually have done some finance work with, first of all, the student loan piece, because that's the biggest piece of relevant financial, you know, stature when it comes down to chiropractors, right? Everybody's got the loans unless you know, somehow paid for school. So we've partnered with a student loan tutor to kind of help get student loans in a perspective or in some type of status that helps to lessen the load, especially the first couple of years out of school. We know unless you're just got $1 million practice that fell into your lap from maybe your grandfather or uncle or somebody, it's going to take some time to pay off your student loans. So we partnered with this company and they have some ideas and ways that you can get your student loan payments down to a manageable amount to where you are not, you know, stressing over that, and you can do the work to get your practice up and running. So the other piece to the finance part is utilizing some connections for investing. So we're going to invest into the profession and create an endowment that will offer scholarships for potential students, because we did not have, currently I haven't seen many, if any, scholarships for new students that are coming in. So the ABCA is working to do that. But again, those resources are there for our member database, members of Evoke, and, you know, constituents of either organization to utilize if they wanted to have some help with trying to plan for building a practice, commercial real estate, those things. That same connection that we have is a great connection to have in order to do so. And as far as other, you know, aspects of building a clinic, as you try to say, well, do you go in as an independent contractor, or do I partner with somebody, or do I build out from scratch? That is a piece that, like I said, within our new member benefits category, we actually are able to give some of that exposure to those students and new doctors so that they can kind of come, they can kind of arrive. End of the first 5 years of this program, or first 5 years as a graduated DC, they can kind of arrive at a point to where they say, I have all the tools of the trade. I have seen all of the possibilities. All I have to do now is pick what it is I want to pick to put into my arsenal, my bag, and I'm going to go over here and I'm going to create what it is that I want to do, whether it's a partnership, whether it's a contract, whether it's a clinic from scratch. They have it and they can utilize it. And if at any point they want to come back and get some more, they're members of the ABCA, they always will have it at their fingertips. So we try to combat that issue as well and try to, you know, just provide what we can, all that we can, to each of our members so that they can choose.
Do you do a lot of outreach to students or to young chiropractors, or how do people find the ABCA and come to be involved as members?
Yeah, our organization has a hierarchy. So of course we're governed by, you know, the board of directors, and then we have regional directors, which the states are split into three regions, West, Central, and East. And then each region has whatever school sits in that region, they have the opportunity to have form a student American Black Chiropractic Association chapter. And if there is no one that's currently there, we really rely on either the regional director to kind of know that information so that they've filtered a bond between the school. So when the school notices that there may be students that are interested in the ABCA, or we always remain on the official list of clubs for the, you know, the school's clubs. And so at that point, we hope that they could, you know, find us and find us and join the association. And then they open up all of these member benefits. But our outreach has grown with social media. So of course, now that's just the way we're going with, because that is the space where we can most definitely reach the most people. And so we just hope that, you know, if you're a student of chiropractic, you know, are friends with someone who's a student of chiropractic who has come across one of us or has been thrown into one of these groups or pages. And so things start to, you know, filter, and the algorithm starts to throw chiropractic out there, and they grab on and hang on to what it is that we're doing. But for the most part, I think, you know, our outreach has also taken a turn in the last 5 years along the lines of we have a community outreach project. It's an initiative that was written into our bylaws at the founding of the association. And so with our community outreach project, we go into the urban core or the communities within the area of our national convention every year. And we pick one organization and we contact that organization and say, you know, we partner with you guys for our annual convention. It'll be in your area. We want to invite some kids out, or most of these organizations have, you know, kids, young kids, or even up to college kids, but invite some of your students out and join us. We will put on a 2-hour presentation events for them where they can do the convention thing for the first time and get exposed to what chiropractic is, to see students that look like them and doctors that look like them. We're in white coats, we're in scrubs, just so that we can expose chiropractic to these communities and do the education of doing the doctor to patient education through these students and through this community outreach project, in hopes that they'll leave there and they won't be like me, right? The graduate at like the age of 24 saying, what's chiropractic? You know, but if I'm a kid in some STEM program by the 9th grade and I go to one of these projects or one of these programs, I'm able then to say, yeah, I remember when I was in the 9th grade, chiropractic is this and that and the third, because I saw all of these chiropractors and they came, and I remember they put on a show and they showed us the spine, and, you know, things of that nature. And they won't forget. So when they get to a crossroads down the line where, you know, they have to decide, are you going to grad school? Are you going into healthcare? What are you going to do? Chiropractic is really a piece to that pie for them. If they're interested in nursing, chiropractic, cardiology or kinesiology, chiropractic is at least in the pie. So it's an option. Right now, it's not been an option. So we've done the work in the communities over the last probably 5 years to put on these projects, programs, and ask these organizations to bring their students and their students and kids into our national convention agenda so that they could get exposed. And that's kind of like the first piece to that. The second piece is that we kind of make sure that the school that's in that city that is the same city or, you know, walking distance, if you will, from the organization, that we bridge a gap and make sure that they now are in contact with one another. And now the school can be responsible for educating the community through that organization, and the ABCA can go about its works into the next state and do the same thing. So that's kind of where we're at with that piece. I think we most definitely are on our way with changing the way that we market the profession with utilizing those organizational programs that are built into our national convention. I think the next step is we want to really, really, really target historically Black colleges and universities. So I'm trying to figure out a way to actually go through each school and say, what's the HBCU closest to you? Let's work on getting you bridged up with that school. So then I would call that HBCU, create a meeting and say, listen, you gotta start promoting chiropractic to, you know, these students that are about to graduate that are maybe biology majors or kinesiology majors. We need to be on the list. And here's the school that you want to contact, right? And then I link the school with the HBCU. ABCA steps out of the picture, but the bridge is made. So that's what we're trying to do. That's the next step, the next phase in our, you know, marketing of the profession and the community outreach of the profession in the urban core and in some minority communities or counties in the states.
So thank you so much, Dr. Edward. This has been really a really good conversation. So is there anything you'd like to share with us? Any final thoughts about, you know, just your organization?
Just stay with us. Keep tapping the well. Like, most definitely contact the ABCA when you need someone. Consider us for, you know, speaking roles. Other than that, I would just say, you know, keep doing the works to building a profession, helping to promote and build a profession that's based around a big picture versus just one piece of the puzzle. And I think together we'll make it there. But I would love for somebody's beautiful face to be in the place when we are at our national convention in Hayward at Life West on June the 3rd through 6th in 2021. So I think it'll be a great time. And I think we will most definitely continue to do the good works, and we'll, you know, bounce off of each other and just work together to get this thing done so that we can move the profession. I'm here for it.
Thank you, Dr. Edwards, for this vital conversation about nutrition, chiropractic care, and understanding the importance of diversity in healthcare. Continue listening to this series for monthly conversations with key thought leaders in holistic healthcare, with discussions about nutrition education, race and health, and natural approaches to health. This podcast is a part of the Holistic Matters podcast series, which you can access for free on holisticmatters.com and on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes are released monthly on Mondays, first thing in the morning.